world will never be the same again after the barbarous crime and blunder which we are about to commit.
Mr. DeLay's views are well known. He has a long history of intemperate remarks and ad hominem attacks.
Very frustrating that people that you that I've met here who have gone out of their way to be gracious and courteous and extremely decent and kind in this very, very difficult time, that there is no ability to provide any safety for them.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Tuesday, March 18th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell said today that 30 nations have declared varying levels of support and 15 others have given their backing privately. Most of the nations named by Powell would not have a combat role, but have allowed the United States to base troops on their soil and to let U.S. planes overfly their territory. Others have reportedly offered expertise in dealing with possible chemical weapons attacks. Last night, President Bush told the nation as commander-in-chief he would exercise the sovereign authority in his power to use force in assuring the nation's security against what he perceives as threats posed by Iraqi President Saddam Hussein.
The nation's Security Council has not lived up to its responsibilities, so we will rise to ours. In recent days, some governments in the Middle East have been doing their part. They have delivered public and private messages urging the dictator to leave Iraq so that disarmament can proceed peacefully. He has thus far refused. All the decades of deceit and cruelty have now reached an end. Saddam Hussein and his sons must leave Iraq within 48 hours. Their refusal to do so will result in military conflict, commenced at a time of our choosing. For their own safety, all foreign nationals, including journalists and inspectors, should leave Iraq immediately. We are now acting because the risks of inaction would be far greater. In 1 year or 5 years, the power of Iraq to inflict harm on all free nations would be multiplied many times over. With these capabilities, Saddam Hussein and his terrorist allies could choose the moment of deadly conflict when they are strongest. We choose to meet that threat now, where it arises, before it can appear suddenly in our skies and cities. Free nations have a duty to defend our people by uniting against the violent. And tonight, as we have done before, America and our allies accept that responsibility.
President Bush. Saddam Hussein has defied President Bush's ultimatum to leave Iraq with his sons or face war, appearing today on television in military uniform for the first time since the 1991 Gulf War and warning his commanders to prepare for battle. Mobilized by a televised appeal, thousands of demonstrators swept into the streets of the Iraqi capital to show their support for the Iraqi leader. Waving pictures of Saddam, the protesters promised to give Saddam their blood and souls. Reaction to Bush's ultimatum has been swift worldwide. France's prime minister says whether it concerns the necessary disarmament of Iraq or the undesirable change of regime, there is no justification for a unilateral decision to resort to force. German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder says, "My question was and is, does the degree of threat stemming from the Iraqi dictator justify a war that will bring certain death to thousands of innocent men, women, and children? My answer to that was and is no." And Canada's Prime Minister Vicente Fox, or rather Canada's Prime Minister Jean Chrétien, says if military action proceeds without a new resolution of the Security Council, Canada will not participate. Yesterday at the UN, the international community reacted with disappointment that the U.S. had failed to reach a diplomatic agreement. Mikhail Hwebe, Syrian's ambassador.
Withdrawing the inspectors, it has very significant meaning, and it has an implication, very dangerous implication, which it means there is no more inspections, which it means there is no disarmament peacefully to the Iraqis, which we have been working all the time on this matter.
We are disappointed that no convergence was found on any of the proposals that were on the table. Nevertheless, although we face a grave situation, we believe that the time for diplomacy
Pakistani Ambassador
never ends,
Munri Akram.
And we certainly hope that even at the 11th hour, we might find a situation which could turn the tide and avoid a conflict.
The majority of the council confirmed
French Ambassador Jean-Marc de la Sablière.
They do not want to authorize the use of force. The majority consider that it would not be legitimate, whereas the inspection is producing result, to take such a decision.
Even as the United Nations withdrew its last weapons inspector from Iraq today, several foreign ministers were planning to attend an open meeting of the Security Council tomorrow to hear from the two top inspectors on the key remaining disarmament issues for Baghdad to resolve. In opposition to Tony Blair's support for U.S.-led war on Iraq, several members of the British Parliament have resigned. Yesterday, Tony Blair was dealt another blow when cabinet member and leader of the U.K. House of Commons, Robin Cook, resigned.
On Iraq, I believe the prevailing mood of the British people is sound. They do not doubt that Saddam is a brutal dictator, but they are not persuaded he is a clear and present danger to Britain. They won't. Inspections to be given a chance. And they suspect that they're being pushed too quickly into conflict by a US administration with an agenda of its own. Above all, they are uneasy at Britain going out on a limb in a military adventure without a broader international coalition and against the hostility of many of our traditional allies. From the start of the present crisis, as leader of this House, I've insisted on the right of this place to vote on whether Britain should go to war. I intend to join those tomorrow night who vote against military action now. It is for that reason, and that reason alone, and with a heavy heart, that I've resigned from the government.
Robin Cook, UK House of Commons. Vice Chairman of the Labour Party and Member of British Parliament George Galloway is also one of the world's most outspoken activists seeking to bring public attention to the other side of British and American foreign policy and speaking harshly against the sanctions imposed on the Iraqi people. Peace Watch spoke with him today as the Bush administration declares that the time for diplomacy is over and issues a 48-hour deadline for Saddam Hussein to leave Iraq.
The truth is, the world will never be the same again after the barbarous crime and blunder, worse than a crime, a blunder, in the words of Talleyrand in the 19th century, which we are about to commit with my own country, the tail of an American presidency which is behaving like a stupid, vicious, and huge dog.
So Mr. Blair has the authority and the support to go ahead with this this allying with the U.S. on this particular issue, despite the overwhelming objections of the British people?
Well, I wouldn't like to give you the impression that it's overwhelming objections. That would be misleading. The opinion polls have started to turn the other way. We're still ahead. We're still the majority of British public opinion, those of us who oppose the war, but we're not an overwhelming majority. If the war is not sharp, if it is not short, if it is as jagged as I think it will be rather than sharp, and if it has the kind of consequences I predict of destabilizing and making even more chaotic a very unstable part of the world, if it creates the 10,000 new bin Ladens that I'm predicting that it will, then he will pay a very high political price for it.
Well, what does that really mean? We keep hearing about these resignations from Labour Party members. How does that really impact upon the situation of Tony Blair, other than making a very high-profile official statement?
Well, not much, in truth, because we have a Prime Minister who isn't listening. He didn't listen to the mass rebellion in the House of Commons a couple of weeks ago. He's not listening to the opinion polls. he's possessed of a messianic belief that there is some kind of white man's burden that has to be shouldered by the Anglo-Saxon leadership of Bush and Blair. And he seems to share a rather sneering xenophobic contempt for our European partners. A man who said he would make us at the heart of Europe has made us instead a cancer within Europe. He has turned the people of the Arab and Muslim world against us, put us in the front ranks of the hated. And I think that our people and our interests will pay a high price for that.
There's some critics that say that some members of your party, the Labour Party, are simply using the current political situation as a plot to oust Tony Blair from power.
Well, it's not so much a plot as an open declaration. I'm one of those who believe that the Labour Party was hijacked by this small group of Blairites, as they called themselves, in the unfortunate days after the death of our previous leader, John Smith, and that the hijackers are flying the plane to disaster.
You said that if this were a short, sharp, consequences-less war, that it might benefit Prime Minister Tony Blair. What about the possibilities that some have raised that this is actually a illegal war? Internationally. Have you given any thought to that? Has your party considered?
Well, you know, I don't mean to be rude to any lawyers listening, but the law is a marketplace. And if you shop around, you can always find a lawyer who'll give you the advice that you want. I'm not a great believer in these legal games. I, as a religious person, consider that the only thing that matters is whether an action is moral. And then I ask, is it going to have the effect we claim it is? I think it's a thoroughly immoral thing to do, to kill Iraqi children, as we've been doing for the last 13 years, because of a disagreement with their government, a government which we supported, helped get into power, and helped arm to the teeth. And it would be equally immoral to now kill tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of them, in order to remove that government. I just think that's immoral. It'll also, as I've tried to say, be a blunder, because it will have the opposite effect of that which is claimed. It will make terrorism worse in the world. It will make the world less safe, not more. And I've said for months now that the one man who wants this war even more than George Bush is Osama bin Laden. This will bring about the very cataclysmic confrontation between the Muslims and the others, between the East and the West, that he set out to engineer by the great crime he committed in your country in September 2001.
Well, now, aside from the political consequences that Tony Blair could face, is there any procedure or formality that could be undertaken on the part of the Parliament or the citizens of Britain to prevent him from moving forward with this action?
I'm afraid not. We're one of the few countries in the world that doesn't have a constitution. And that was all right as long as our leaders behaved reasonably and not against the grain of public opinion. But now that we have a government that, even when the opinion polls were showing something like 80-odd percent against the war, was determined to go through with it, We're finding the democratic deficit is a yawning chasm.
There are some that would say we have a similar situation here, in as many have said that George Bush was not elected but selected by the U.S. Supreme Court, and that he is, in fact, going forward with his agenda in spite of a divided constituency or public.
Well, I'm sure that that's one of the reasons for the war, the very illegitimacy of the Bush presidency and its inability to get elected next time with anything other than the cards of terror and regime change and a world at war. The issue of unfinished Bush family business, oil, Israel, all of these things are the issues that are really in play here. It's nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction or the character of the Saddam Hussein regime.
George Galloway, any final thoughts on your part?
Well, just that we're a couple of seconds from midnight, I suspect, and that it's going to be a long, dark, and very frightening night. And I hope the educated people, the people who understand the things that are going on in our name in the world will spill onto their streets, will stream out of their colleges, their schools, their universities, their workplaces, will demonstrate, will do everything they can to throw a spanner in the works of war.
George Galloway, Vice Chairman of the Labour Party and Member of British Parliament.
Light is in the air right now. 2002 rebel music. The saga continues. Listen, children. What's the problem in Manhattan? Everything, men, they look like Bin Laden. So I have problems when I go to the airport. First thing they do, they wanna ask me for my passport. They said Wyclef, we love the Fugees.
Wyclef Jean war no more. Several days ago, the U.S. said it had given up all hope of getting Turkey's parliament to cooperate with American war plans against Iraq, and it pulled the $15 billion economic aid package it had originally offered. But with the recent election of Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the Turkish parliament may now be taking steps to change its mind. Peace Watch reporter Aaron Glantz is in Turkey, and we reached him earlier today to explain some of the recent developments.
What I see is a limited number of U.S. troops coming right here to Kızıltepe, which is where I am now. There's a U.S. operations center near the airport here. The castle in neighboring Mardin has been turned into a radar station, but nothing like the 60,000-strong invasion of troops that the United States wanted. The Turkish parliament, under immense public pressure, 90% of Turks opposed to the war, had voted no on March 1st, and had held reasonably fast to this no. But just as George Bush was giving his speech last night, saying that a war was imminent, and giving Saddam Hussein 48 hours to leave the country, so too were Turkish politicians beginning to change their mind, making a calculation, as the president of Turkey, a ceremonial position, saying many months that he did not support a war without United Nations approval. Now with a war likely, even without United Nations approval, Turkish politicians figuring they can't stop the war, better to participate than do nothing.
How has the U.S. been able to deploy troops onto Turkish soil so far without receiving Turkish parliamentary approval?
Well, the Turkish parliament did approve allowing U.S. troops onto Turkish soil more than a month ago, but only unlimited deployment to improve the bases and upgrade them. So it's said that without another motion, they cannot bring an invasion force here. It's also said that without another motion, they cannot use Turkish airspace to bomb Iraq. Although they have a permanent military presence at Incirlik, in the west of Turkey, which is used to bomb Iraq on a regular basis and maintain the no-fly zones, they cannot go through an intense bombing campaign from Turkey, or even, some say, use Turkish airspace without another motion from Parliament, which is why another motion from Parliament could come, at least on the airspace, as early as tomorrow, and likely by the end of the week.
That's what I was going to ask. What do you see as the timeline for events unfolding? What's about to happen now?
Well, today, Tayyip Erdogan, the new prime minister, gave his program for the new year, the 59th government of the Republic today, and got a vote of confidence. He had originally said there would be no vote until after the Nevroz holiday, which is Friday. But most observers think that given George Bush's time schedule, it's likely that a vote could come before that. People that I talked to in the parliament today tell me a vote is likely tomorrow.
And there's not much debate over where that vote will come out?
I think it's highly unlikely that the parliament will vote no. What has happened since the narrow three-vote margin last time, three votes saying no, a number of things have happened. The most important thing that's happened is that the head of the Turkish army, General Hilmi Özkök, has said he supports the war. And the army has tremendous power here, and everyone knows that there have been three military coups here in the last 40 years. And the most recent military coup was against the most recent Islamic government before this government of the AK party. Another thing that's happened, though, that is also extremely important from the Turkish political perspective is that Bush has said that he's going to war anyway. So 90% of Turks oppose the war, but there doesn't seem to be anything they can do at this point to stop it. So people who felt like they were taking a stand against the war before, some of them feel like they are cannot have any effect on the situation. And so what they want to do, some more nationalist politicians, is take a stand against the Kurdish state in northern Iraq. And that's why today in Ankara there was a summit between the U.S. envoy to the quote-unquote free Iraqis, the opponents of Saddam Hussein, the Kurdish leader Jalal Talabani, representative of the other Kurdish leader Masoud Barzani, and Turkish officials, as well as representatives of Turkish people, the so-called Turkmen people living in northern Iraq. And the topic of that discussion was what will happen to the existing Kurdish guerrilla armies in northern Iraq after the war, trying to dissuade Turkey from basically invading and occupying northern Iraq at this time. And in exchange, the Kurdish forces promising to disarm after the war and also fight under U.S. command. And these discussions are ongoing.
Can you just finally, Aaron, remind listeners of what effect this would have on the American military plans if Turkey did, in fact, agree to allow the U.S. military access to its bases to launch an offensive against Iraq from the northern front?
The Pentagon estimate is that a war would take 2 months without Turkey and 1 month with Turkey. I mean, I can't really tell you. I'm not a military strategist, but I will tell you that if they couldn't use Turkey, it's incredibly likely they would have no northern front. Airlifting troops into northern Iraq is not really a possibility. There's no sizable airport there. There's multiple guerrilla armies in the area, including the Al-Qaeda-linked group that Colin Powell mentioned about a month ago. And I'd also like to say that the U.S. military presence is having a very bizarre effect on the economy here, which has been totally shut down since the Gulf War in 1991. And now many Turkish people are going to work for the U.S. military, even though they oppose the war. And the U.S. military is paying them as little as $3 a day to do work that Turkish union members would make about $500 or $600 a month doing, and a U.S. union member would make $3,000 or $4,000 a month doing. So in this entire atmosphere of war, you also have a good dose of union busting.
Correspondent Aaron Glantz speaking with Pacifica's Peace Watch producer Scott Gurian. Larry Binsky, Pacifica's national affairs correspondent from 1987 to 1998, is back with us in Washington to help with Pacifica's expanded coverage of this time of crisis. Larry, welcome back. You were on Capitol Hill today. Is Congress still a factor in this equation, or is the invasion inevitable? What were your impressions?
I think Congress, for the moment, has taken itself out of the game, and it really I learned in all those years being national affairs correspondent and reporting here in Washington, Verna, to try not to be surprised at anything I saw on Capitol Hill. But frankly, I was surprised today at how little the institution seems to be engaging with this question. I attended two committee meetings, one Senate and one House. The Senate Foreign Affairs Foreign Relations Committee was discussing the progress in the war on terrorism, and the House Armed Services Committee was discussing the military budget. Now, you would think in both of those venues they would have ample room for a discussion of what's about to happen seemingly in Iraq. But the word Iraq was hardly ever mentioned. The attendance of the senators and members of the House of Representatives at these committee meetings was very poor. Only two, possibly three of the 15 members of the Foreign Relations Committee were there, and only eight of the 25 members of the House Armed Services Committee bothered to attend. And when I spoke to some aides to congresspeople and said, what's up with this? They said, look, this is a tidal wave. This is the president's initiative. Polls are showing the American people are at best ambiguous and at worst, from our point of view, heavily in favor of the war. And very few people are going to stand out right now and say anything about it. So Congress has taken itself out of the game. I should also say that it seems as if Congress will not have not only not a vote to authorize a declaration of war, But even any kind of major session about this, absent some unforeseen development. Mm.
Was there any sense that Congress will have to play a role or have a role to play any time soon should the attack begin in Iraq?
I think Congress will have a role to play, Verna, only if the attack turns out to be some sort of catastrophe and or there turns out to be some other kind of catastrophe, heaven forbid, here at home. In that case, you will see all of the self-satisfied people who are praising themselves today, people from the Treasury Department and the State Department and the FBI and all the branches of the military service at the two hearings I went to have to once again explain themselves to Congress rather than sit up there and say, we're doing a great job, just give us more money.
Mm. Now, the Homeland Security Department has actually increased the level to a code orange at this point. What's the security situation like on Capitol Hill? Do people seem nervous at the possibility of attacks on that very visible symbol in this country?
Something very bizarre is going on here today, Verna, as you know, and most of the people around the country probably don't know. A man sometime yesterday, apparently from North Carolina, a disgruntled tobacco farmer, drove a tractor somehow all the way up here and drove it into the tidal pool between the Washington and Jefferson memorials. What is that, less than a mile from the White House and a couple of miles from the Capitol? He says he has it loaded with explosives, the same kind that blew up the Oklahoma City building. The police, so far, it's a standoff. They're not attacking him. He isn't making threatening moves to blow this thing up. But the entire downtown Washington is completely paralyzed by this. You can't drive anywhere near it in a bus or a taxi or anything. Mm-hmm. And this is just one lone individual deranged who is able to tie the city in complete knots. Capitol Hill is crawling with police like I've never seen before. And another much sadder element of this is that this is a time of year at school intersection in many schools. You ordinarily would see dozens and dozens of buses lined up bringing kids to tour the Capitol. A few schools are there, nothing like what I'd seen in the past.
So if he's driven that tractor into the tidal basin, if there were any explosives in there, I would imagine they're worthless at this point.
I have no idea. I'm not a ballistics or munitions expert, but it is. I have seen cities tied in knots by various things, and this city today is paralyzed for a good part of its downtown.
What will you be covering in the next few days for our Pacifica listeners, Larry?
Well, one thing I'm going to be looking at tomorrow is that UN session in New York. We're going to be looking very closely at Hans Blix and Mohamed El-Baradei's final reports. But tomorrow, the Congressional Progressive and Black Caucuses, Verna, are revealing their joint alternative budget on Capitol Hill. And this should be very interesting because, of course, one of the things that the Bush administration is doing right now is not putting in the war into its budget at all. They hope to obviously get money for it later on in perhaps a resolution commending the troops and escalating the federal budget by an enormous amount. And everybody is extremely nervous with this declining economy about what the Bush administration is really doing to the future of this country economically. So it'll be very interesting tomorrow to see what the Congressional Progressive and Black Caucuses say about the budget insofar as the Bush administration leaving out the war as a cost.
Larry Binsky, Pacifica's National Affairs Correspondent. Welcome back, Larry.
Thank you, Verna.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.